Today is September 25th, 2008. This is Julie Wise, and I'm interviewing Dr. Fred Borland. Is that how we pronounce
Borland.
That? Borland. B-O-U-R-L-A-N-D. For the Bracero History Project, and we are here in Keiser, Arkansas. K-E-I-S-E-R. Okay, Dr. Borland, where and when were you born?
I was born in 1948 in Blytheville. Grew up in a little community between about halfway between Keiser and Manila. It's called Los Cane. It's a farming community that so I grew up with a kind of hand picking cotton until I was up to in high school. Then in the late 50s, early 60s, the area went from hand picking to machine picking just in a matter of just a few years.
And what was that called again? Lost Cane?
Yes, uh-huh.
How do you spell that?
L-O-S-T-C-A-N-E.
C-A-N-E. Mm-hmm. Lost Cane, interesting.
Right.
And so that's where you grew up?
Yes, uh-huh.
And what was your, did your family own the farm? Did
yes,
you work the farm? Okay,
yes,
how big was it?
When I was there, a couple hundred acres. Mm-hmm. And my dad later got a little bit more than rented some. So it was a small family farm.
And how and when did this farm come into the family?
Oh, goodness. Both my mother and dad moved to this area in the 1920s. Their parents, my dad's parents' family was from Mississippi, and my mother's family was from Tennessee. And when they started building levees and draining the swamps around here, a lot of families from Tennessee and Mississippi moved here. They were among that. They were both about 8 or 9 years old at that time. So they were married in 1932, so I guess that's when their farm started with 20 acres and a mule, and then ended up being the family farm.
And so you said you used to work on the farm as a child.
Sure, sure.
And what would you do?
Well, I did everything. I grew up, earliest things I can remember is being pulled on a cotton sack. You take your naps out in the field, and Mom picking and being pulled on the sack. Then, so you graduate, you start off with hand pick, you'd pick cotton and put it in your mother's sack. Then you graduate up to your own toe sack. And then when you got a little bit older picking more, you'd get a pick sack, start with about a 7.5 foot sack. Then you get real good, you go up to 9 foot sack, and you got real good, you go to 10.5 foot sack. So,
what's a toe sack?
Burlap bag.
Oh, okay. Like, do you carry it with the toe? I don't think so. Got it.
You tote it.
Got it. Excellent. So, and who, and did you grow anything other than cotton or
yes,
no?
We had soybeans and wheat. That was primary, little bit of sorghum, but primarily cotton, soybean.
And then prior to World War II, who besides your family was picking cotton on your family's farm?
Well, I wasn't around before World War II.
Right.
As they typically would have maybe a family living, would live on the farm or at least come in and work there in the early 50s. A lot of times we'd have people from the hill country or, of Arkansas would come down, and sometimes that people would live in our car shed. They'd put a burlap or a canvas over the front, and a family would live there. And if you look around this country, and I've got a map out there that I've got framed, a 1955 map shows a dot wherever a house was in Mississippi County, and these roads were just dotted with houses. So there's a lot of, most of them were workers would come in just for a few months and do the chopping cotton and through picking cotton. We'd go split-term school. I grew up pretty much until I was almost through high school going split-term. We'd go chop cotton, go about 6 weeks during the summer of school, then we'd get out during cotton picking time.
Interesting. And so Lost Cane, what was the big town near there?
Manila.
Near
Manila. Yeah. Okay. So, and when I was growing up, we had a school, go through eight grades, and then we'd, after eighth grade, you'd go to Manila to high school.
Okay.
And some year, sometime when I was in high school, it consolidated with Manila.
With Manila, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so you're saying there were families that would come. It sounds like not exactly sharecropping.
No, that wasn't sharecropping.
Okay.
That would be just people would come, live on the place, and work.
And you'd pay them by the pound or the day or something.
Pay by the pound.
By the pound.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And did you have sharecroppers ever?
We did not on our land. No.
Okay. And did you ever bring in people from Memphis to chop?
No. Okay. We would bring in. There'd be truckloads. Occasionally, we'd get a bus load of. Hands from primarily Osceola or Blytheville, mm-hmm. if we needed help to come in, and a lot of times that was arranged. The gins were the kind of the focus of arranging a lot of that labor.
Okay. And for the most part, were these workers white or black or
the choppers? Most of those rang in were black.
Choppers were black.
Yeah. Now the picking ones that come in. Let me close that door.
Make sure the tape's clear.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
Gosh. Sorry about that.
No problem. If it gets hot in here, though, feel free to open it again.
Oh,
I mean, I'm fine.
No, we've got a pan here.
Okay.
As I recall, most of the, you know, the at least in our area, the people that lived on the would come and live in these houses were migrant workers or white, but the ones who come out in buses, that were primarily blacks, groups of blacks that would come out, and there'd be hands, and I guess it may be some out of Memphis, now that you mention it, they would have kind of a, I don't know what their name, title, straw boss type of thing, would go and gather up these folks and bring them out in their bus, and they would get a percentage of so much per hand per day, and I don't recall just what that was.
And
But the chopping was a, you know, that was days before herbicides were a major, that was a major effort that was involved. You see a field often, sometimes I've seen 50 to 100 hands out chopping in one field.
And then were there ever other immigrants? I know there were kind of Jamaicans in this area at a certain time.
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
It was primarily the ones coming out of towns and then the hill folks.
The hill folks, who were, and the hill folks were white then.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. And did the farm ever employ Texas Mexicans?
Ours didn't. Now, okay. What would happen? The Hispanics that I was familiar with were mainly associated with a gin. Again, back then the gins would were kind of the loan. They would give people money to pay hands for picking, the hand picking and all. So the gin was a much more vitally involved in the day-to-day operation of the farm, cotton farm, than it is today.
Hmm. And we're talking about the 50s and 60s?
Yes. Okay. Yes. The gin that I'm familiar with at that time was their Whistleville. The people that owned the kind of the plantation was the Whistle Plantation. Mm-hmm. And they had a kind of a barracks building. And, you know, as a kid, it was a monster. You know, in my mind, it was a big building. But I suspect it was probably maybe 10 type of apartments. It was two-story, which was very unusual for this part of the country. As I recall, it was two stories. And it was primarily used for the Hispanics, the Mexicans coming in. Now, I don't remember them chopping, but I suspect they did. But they probably stayed on the Whistle Plantation chopping. And what they would do during the fall is most of, like my dad's farm, we, you know, the kids that were out of school, a split-term school, then the folks from the hills and the people that lived on the place, we did much of the hand-picking. But when we'd start getting behind, my dad would contact the gin. If the Hispanic Mexicans were available, then they would come and chop or come and pick cotton for us. So I do remember them picking on our place occasionally. But I'm sure that was kind of, once the Whistles got their land picked, they would kind of lease them out to other, use for other gin customers.
Interesting. So you're saying the customers of the same gin?
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay. you were paying to use their gin?
Yes, uh-huh. Yeah, we would take our cotton there. Uh-huh. And, you know, of course, the way that typically works is the gin still, to a large extent, will keep the seed for the price for gin and the cotton. So you're tied to that gin in a sense.
Okay. So so do you remember when you first, well, let me ask you also, what organizations were important to your family, like the Extension or the Farm Bureau, or were they in a growers association?
The Farm Bureau. I remember going to Farm Bureau meetings. That was kind of a big deal, go to the annual meeting each year. They had door prizes, so that was a big deal for us, for a kid. to some extent with Extension, I remember Extension agents occasionally be out on a farm. So that was the primary ones.
And so do you remember when you first sort of heard as a kid, about these Mexican workers? I guess if you were born in 48,
I don't remember first hearing. I mean, they were a part of the culture as I was growing up.
Mm-hmm. And why do you think farmers were bringing in this labor from?
Oh, it's just essential to have more hand labor. If you, some time ago, I did some estimating, kind of, if we had to hand pick our crop today, it would take pretty much the population of Arkansas to hand pick our cotton crop. I mean, that's, and we were talking about the same number of acres, maybe not quite as much production back then, but it was a total, every community, it just, anybody that was available was out hand picking. And you go through the little towns like Kaiser and all around here, and they're about kind of ghost towns now. You see so many empty store frames. Well, that's because they had so many people here hand picking, chopping and picking cotton. It was just a different culture. They tell me here in Kaiser, used to have, I think, 2 movie theaters. It was just a complete different society than what it is now, from a community standpoint.
And you, so you're saying that your family was not a part of contracting directly?
That's correct.
Okay. So we would
subcontract through the gin.
Through the gin.
Yes.
Okay. And that was sort of an informal thing you would kind of call up and...
I was a kid. That's what I understood.
Okay.
And I suspect what would happen is Dad would put his name probably on a list of whenever they're available, we would get them. I know he was always tickled to be able to get them because, you know, generally we were behind. And, hand-picking cotton, that was a long process. Very, very often, mm-hmm. if we got in bad weather, I remember spending Christmas vacations from, you know, finishing up pulling cotton then. We'd hand snap it instead of picking it. But that's the worst Christmas vacation you could have. Have in bad weather, go out there and hand snap cotton over Christmas vacation. So, the picking, it was the bottleneck of cotton production. My mom tells me back in the 30s, she can recall her dad, 1 year they were not able to get, you know, they had the floods and couldn't get it out, so he took thing out with a mule and just stripped the cotton. Then they spent every night picking it out of the burrs and throwing the burrs in the fireplace most of the winter. So that, I mean, that's just kind of that's the picking was it was a major effort.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any sense maybe of how many Mexicans were employed by your family over time?
Oh,
or at any
out of
time?
That group, there's probably at least 30 somewhere in that that, and they were all in that one dormitory.
So 30 at a time, you think?
30, yeah, something like that. When they would come, they would bring the whole bunch out.
Okay. You're speaking of your farm or of Whistle?
Of the Whistle farm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And how about your family's farm?
Well, the only time we actually had them would be that group coming from the gym.
And so how many would be at a time? Oh, the full group you would get.
Yeah, so as I recall, they pretty much took the whole group, kept them together, but I don't, you know, I may be wrong there.
And then when that would happen, would you house them on your farm, or they'd go back at night to the gin?
Oh, they'd go back to their dormitory.
And do you have any recollection of any particular requirements that your family had to fill when you were renting them out?
No.
Oh.
No.
So you weren't worrying about feeding them?
Okay. No.
And do you recall, was it all men, or were there families?
I don't remember. I recall them being all men. Now, my memory may be wrong, but as I recall, these were all men in that, in a dormitory type setting. They were all very hard workers, and the most unique thing I remember about them is that, you know, we normally would take pick sacks and put a strap over our shoulders. These guys would take it between their legs and tie it around their waist, and so then when you do that, you got to stand up all day picking. And they would pretty much stoop over, never get on their knees. Would pick all the, and it's just, you know, it's a more efficient way to pick because you can throw the cotton right in the sack easier. But they had a stronger back than I did.
So what posture would you assume while you were picking?
It'd be like this here, is that you would put it over, and you can get down on your knees and pick, and bend over for a while, and you can do different positions.
Whereas for them, they would be on their knees the whole time.
No, they'd be standing up.
Oh, they'd be standing up the whole time.
And stooping over, because if you put the sack between your legs, you couldn't get on your knees, you couldn't put the cotton in the sack.
Was there any other differences in the way they picked, the picking and the pulling and the snapping and these kinds of things?
Not really. That's the only really major difference. And the ones that I recall, most of them were extremely hard workers. They were very good pickers. They do a lot per day.
Mm-hmm.
As with any pickers, you have to kind of watch, make sure they didn't get too many burrs and other materials into the pick sack.
And what kind of, let me think, so in terms of the tools that they would need, like the sacks and that kind of stuff, were you providing that for them, or was
they
that,
would bring them,
they'd bring it probably from the gym, whatever.
We were basically a subcontractor, I suspect, is the way that worked.
And then,
the other thing I really remember, you know, they, of course, I had an aunt and uncle had a little country store, and, these guys would, and then the store there at Whistlefield as well. The store owners would buy pepper plants. You know, we'd grown peppers during summer, and by that time they were kind of dried peppers. We'd take the whole plant up there with the dried peppers on it, and the Mexicans would buy those pepper plants to get the peppers.
Oh, wow.
And then the other thing is that they had this country, you know, of course, electricity hadn't been in here very long, so a lot of the family still had the old treadle-type sewing machines. And that was a hot commodity that the Mexicans liked to buy and take back to Mexico. So that was kind of probably when all the treadle sewing machines disappeared from this country.
They got shipped overseas. It's really funny. So then when they were on your farm picking, were there still white folks and black folks, kind of locals, picking alongside them?
Yes.
And would they be picking in crews or just kind of each man for himself? Or how'd it work?
I don't recall. What it's in my mind is they would kind of be kind of over by themselves on one side of the field, and we'd be picking kind of another. I don't remember row per, you know, intermingling row per row. And it wasn't that many times we had them actually on our farm.
Mm-hmm.
So they, you know, with the language barrier, I think it was kind of, and picking was a little bit of a social event too. You could talk all day and still pick.
Mm-hmm.
Or most people could pick and talk at the same time. So there wasn't a lot of intermingling because of the language barrier.
And do you have any sense of what some of the other workers on your farm thought about the Mexicans?
They were glad to have more the merrier.
More the merrier.
Yeah, they were glad to have the help to get on and try to. And generally, the time they came to our farm, we were getting desperate to get finished. So there was never any resentment.
Yeah. Okay. And then, so how much contact did you have, not necessarily with those on your farm, but just in general around town, how much contact did you have with them?
Very little. I would see them, in particular this group at that one gin, mm-hmm. but I had very little direct contact.
So did you know?
I was out at picking cotton all the time. I didn't have time. Socialize.
And did you know any by name, or was there any one guy that there's a funny story about him or anything?
No.
Okay. And did you ever have the same guys back at your farm one year after the next?
I don't know.
Okay. And do you know what they did on their days off or when they weren't picking?
I would see them around the stores. Mm-hmm. That's about all. Shopping type of thing. Mm-hmm. They would stay around that barracks area for the, you know, that I recall.
Okay.
Yep.
And when around the stores, that would be Manila, or that would be in Los Cane?
Well, the ones I saw, we had a store there at Los Cane. There was a store at Whistleville where mm-hmm. the gin was. Mm-hmm. I don't recall. Of course, I didn't go to town much either, so I don't specifically remember them in town, but I suspect they did.
Okay. So do you have any memory maybe of them going out to eat or to a bar or any of that type of stuff?
No.
Okay.
No.
And do you have any memory... well, let me back up for a second. In these towns, how did the segregation work at that time?
You're talking about with Hispanic or with black?
No, with white and black.
Oh, with white and black is very, very obvious. Mm-hmm. You had the black and white restrooms, black and white water fountains. A lot of it was very, you know, and I recall as the image I have as a kid is, you know, the black, their water fountain was the older. And they'd get a new water fountain, that'd be the white one, they'd move probably the older one. So it's that kind of image in my mind of the black, white. And obviously, churches, other institutions were segregated, schools were segregated.
And were there parts of town that were sort of more the black part of
sure,
the white part?
Sure, okay. There still is
mm-hmm.
In some towns. So in Blytheville, you had Ash Street, that was pretty much the main street of the black community, and Main Street was the white. Now there are some intermingling, but not a great deal.
And do you have any recollection of which side of town the Mexicans were more likely to be hanging on?
No, I don't. Okay. I don't know.
And
you know the stores, like I said, the blacks would come into Main Street. I mean, shop and all, but their restaurants and things like that were on Ash Street. So there was some intermingling, and I suspect the Hispanics would do the same thing, would come into the department stores and all, you know, merchandise type things on Main Street.
On Main Street, okay.
I suspect.
Okay. But you don't have very strong memories
No, I don't.
I don't. Okay. And so what would happen when the contract would end? Would they leave or go work for someone else, or what would happen?
What I recall, the ones there, they would pretty much, they would pick till the contract ended, and they would go back to Mexico.
Okay.
So they you know, and the GN would use them if they got through with their picking. They would subcontract them for whatever time was left.
And then, were you ever aware of any kind of problems that arose around this issue? Or
no,
nothing. No incidents of fighting or.
No, not really. I mean, there was enough work to keep everybody busy.
Right.
So, no, I don't. I grew up a little bit, somewhat sheltered, I mean, mm-hmm. working, but no, I wasn't aware of any particular problems.
And so were you ever aware, maybe when you were out picking and they were out picking, of any complaints or problems that they had or nothing?
No.
Okay. So when did mechanization come?
Well, as far as the mechanical picker, it was late 50s. Was really in the late 40s that the first kind of successful mechanical picker was invented. Then in the 50s, but it wasn't until about late 50s, early 60s, but then within about a three to five year period of time, we went from basically 90% hand picked to 100% machine picked.
Wow. And what period of time would you peg that?
Late 50s, early 60s. My dad got a first picker, and I think it was 62, something mm-hmm. like that, 1962. And that was, he was among the, at least in our community, one of the, maybe a little bit latter, but kind of in that middle of that time period. So from about 60 to 63, 64, this area went from hand picking to machine picking. Mm-hmm. And what a lot of people did is that they would always draw money to pay their hand pickers from the gin, or a lot, most people would. You'd go, the gin was expecting you to bring their cotton there, so they would go ahead and front you money to pay the hand picking, which at that time was get $3 a hundred mm-hmm. so for picking, $3 a hundred pounds. So they would advance the hand picking. Well, what a lot of the machinery people around here did that were selling cotton pickers, they told them and says, okay, go draw your hand picking money and just come pay us that for the picker.
Hmm.
So that's how a lot of the early machines, cotton pickers, were financed, is actually through a gin that they were using the money for hand picking.
Wow. And was it about comparable?
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, it'd take less money to, you can machine pick for less than you have to pay for hand picking, so
right.
you could pretty soon pay off the machine with just that hand picking advances.
Wow. And on the handpicking, did everyone make the same wage, or do you ever recall Mexicans making more or less than others?
No, it was always... Well, I don't know specifically about the Mexicans. Okay. I know what we paid them. It was always... As I was growing up, it was always 3 cents a pound.
3 cents a pound.
Yeah.
So $3 a hundred.
Yeah. And to get 2 cents a pound for pulling.
Okay.
At the end of the year, because you were getting all the burrs and all at that time, so...
And that's sort of like at the end of the season.
Yes, after a freeze and mostly kind of knotty, rotted bows out there, and you just go out there and try and scrap everything up.
See whatever you can get. Mm. And so do you think that this area mechanized sooner or later than other cotton-producing areas?
I think... My impression is about the same time, of the delta. You know, you go into other regions where they use different stripper harvester instead of picker, then that was much, much quicker.
Okay.
So, but as far as in the south, we were probably about the same time.
And
again, it was all, it was a slow, took them a long time to come up with a picker, a mechanical picker, a spindle type picker, because one, it's a... the engineering of it is pretty advanced, because you need to be able to pick twice. You weren't sacrificing the plant. You wanted to just remove the open cotton that was there. And second is that we were mostly very small farms, a lot of 20 acres. So if they'd had a picker there, nobody could afford it. So, there wasn't and everybody had their, through World War II and all, you had your kind of your family, your kids, and maybe one other family living on a farm, and that's about all the pickers you need. So, mm-hmm. Because of the size of the farm. Now, when people started moving in the 50s, a lot of people here started, and kind of coincidental with the mechanical picker coming in, they started moving, a lot of people moved up north to factory jobs and things like that. And of course, that the picker was coming in, but at the same time, that was happening, so that really pushed the need for the mechanical picker. The Mexicans took up some of that gap that mm-hmm. where we didn't have hand pickers. So it all kind of evolved there within a very short period of time.
And
a lot of that, I think, kind of came about, as a result of after World War II and Korea War, that a lot of the... people, the men had been other places and seen there's something besides hand picking cotton for the rest of my life. So, their world widened. But the hand picking was a really deterrent. There was I think it was down in Louisiana at one time back, probably in the 20s or so. There's a record, or I don't know just when it was, of a guy importing monkeys trying to train them to hand pick. That's how difficult. I mean, that's the monster that hand picking was. They, desperate to just get it done. I can't imagine the mess that was. But that's it goes to the extent, shows the extent people went to try to get help hand picking.
And was there ever a time when labor wasn't an issue, when there was kind of enough around?
No,
mm-hmm.
No. It goes back with cotton from the day one. Yeah. Well, at least after it was no longer just a garden plant, when it went into commercial production, of course, that was kind of set the stage for the slavery aspects of the South. That was just there's no other labor available. Mm-hmm. I mean, and certainly, doesn't condone slavery, but that was the only means of being able to get things picked at that time, or at least that was the only avenue they saw. So yeah, I don't think with cotton there's ever been up till some of our modern machines, and still labor is an issue, but it's more quality than quantity at this point.
So do you remember what the workers thought about mechanization? Some of these families you were hiring.
Most people that I know, they by that time a lot of people were looking at factory jobs. Mm-hmm. Families were, you didn't have as many kids, mm-hmm. so mechanization was pretty much well accepted by, hand picking is not something you wanted to do the rest of your life.
Right.
And they looked to For some, it may have forced them on out of the cotton field, but for most, they were already looking at other avenues. So, mm-hmm. at least in this region, I don't ever remember anybody bemoaning the fact that the farmer bought a mechanical cotton picker.
Right. Is that why you think that the Mexican workers stopped coming, basically, because of that?
Sure. I mean, at that point, I think you said the program went through 1964.
Mm-hmm.
By that time, by 64, there was very, very little hand-picked anymore.
And so...
They might have... I don't know if they still brought them in any for chopping. There mm-hmm. probably still some chopping, but that, with the herbicides, that kind of disappeared. The major part of chopping kind of disappeared about the same time.
Oh, with the herbicides?
Yes.
Got it. Interesting. And then did Mexicans come into the area for any other purpose afterward?
Not until recent years. Then they mainly come in, at least the ones from South Texas come in. They're predominant ones that work at our gins now.
Mm-hmm.
The gin labor is primarily migrant workers.
Oh, primarily.
That's what I think. Mm-hmm. I'm primarily maybe a little bit overstated, but they're a dominant force in our gens around here.
And what was your opinion of the work performance of the Mexicans that you worked with?
They were hard workers. I mean, like I said, they put that sack between their legs, and I remember some of them maybe picking like over 400 pounds a day, and that's, you know. Good pickers, anybody pick over, you had to be in good cotton. You pick over 300, that was really good. Anybody pick 400, that was outstanding. So, as I recall, they were extremely hard workers. They were, you know, they got paid by the pound, and they were here away from home wanting to make as much money as they could in a short period of time. So, they were at least the ones, you know, it was a very positive image that I had of the Mexican worker.
And how did their work compare to Americans that you were hiring?
as far as most of these were, the ones that I recall were more, they were probably better, could pick more, but most of them were kind of in the prime of their life as far as health.
Right.
So whereas the Americans, they were, you know, older. Some older, some younger. It was a whole
right.
family. So on average, I'm sure the Mexicans picked more, but they would be equal, basically equal if you took that factor out.
Got it. Interesting. That's a very interesting perspective. So it sounds like there were a lot of advantages to having this labor here. Were
sure.
there any disadvantages? Any way you felt like things were negatively...
Not really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's like I said, it was so much hand labor to be done. So the
yeah.
more you had, the better. You know, and these were good workers. They were hard workers. So that's there may have been some cultural differences that posed a little bit of problems, but that was minor compared to having some workers. I never recall having any kind of fear of them, other than just the unknown. of the language barrier, but over the years, I've always been taught to respect people that work hard, and they worked hard.
Right. Would you hypothetically think of reviving that kind of program, bringing people here for
sure.
Yeah,
there's some perspective that this area in the future may become more of a garden, vegetable crops.
Mm-hmm.
With our proximity to Memphis and to St. Louis and some issues there. If that were to happen, then we would again be looking probably a lot more for hand labor, and certainly it would be a viable option in my mind.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Anything else I forgot to ask that seems important?
Any
other stories that come to mind or funny things to mention?
Not really. I'm trying to remember. I remember my aunt and uncle had a little store, and I remember the pepper plants. That just was vivid in my mind that they, you know, we would take a lot of times, pull up the whole plant, take it there, rather than pulling the peppers off, and they'd buy them by the plant.
Huh.
I forget. There was, seemed like there were some other particular foods that they would focus on that was a little bit unusual, but that's I don't remember the specifics on that.
So you had pepper plants growing on your land, you're saying?
Yeah, just in our, garden. In our garden, we'd have big monster gardens, and by that time we'd pick peppers, and then at the end of the year they you just have your kind of dried peppers on there. We'd pull the whole pepper plant up and take it down there, and they'd buy the whole pepper plant to get the peppers
from the store.
Yes, we'd take them to the store. And like right. I said, my aunt and uncle had a little country store, and mm-hmm. they would take the whole pepper plant. So that may have been just, you know, that may have not been widespread, but that's Dr. Banta.
Mm-hmm.
I pretty much told him my specific stories regarding that. It's, I have a lot of memories of hand picking, and it was it was good and bad. I mean, in a small community, you just didn't know. I didn't know any different. I thought everybody hand picked cotton, and but there was a sense of accomplishment that you got paid for what you got mm-hmm. made. There was no, everybody got same per pound, so you got rewarded for hard work, and I think it instituted from that standpoint. From one perspective, I wish we still had hand picking for our kids to have that type of experience. Mm-hmm. Now, it wouldn't take long for them to learn, but that part of it was very good. I get really aggravated when you see things where they talk about hand picking being abusive and all, and that was never the case. People that picked, they wanted to pick, wanted to get as much as they could, and they picked hard. There's a lot of lessons to learn out there in hand picking cotton. It was not easy lessons, but it was lessons. The Hispanics, as I indicated, they were all that I remember were stout, relatively young men, or age of men that could. That worked hard, and they were here to work, and they were very hard workers and met a need, a very vital need that we had there. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit different than some of the images of the painted house. It's not quite as what I remember, but that's pretty close to John Grisham's book. Yeah. I think they had a family actually living on their place. And one thing I think he got a little bit wrong with the number of acres, they had more people hand picking than related to the number of acres they had.
Maybe he needed more characters.
I think so. And the movie really messed up hand picking, but that's.
I've never seen the movie.
Oh, okay. Well, that was not hand picking. I mean, that's the way they did. But anyway, that's the book was delightful, though. I mean, it brought a lot of the images that were correct, but some of the details were off.
Interesting. All right. Anything else I missed?
That's probably more than you want to know.
No, it's great. I really appreciate your time. Thank you.